Sorry. We're going to need tighter security for these missions, obviously,
Akbar said.
At both ends, your attackers did suborn a local BIM politician, after all.
All of which will cost that much more time and effort,
Phalia murmured, a section of his fur rippling.
It can't be helped, Mon Mothma said firmly. If we don't protect our negotiators, the New Republic will stagnate and wither. Accordingly,
she looked at Akbar,
you will detail a force to accompany Counselor Organa Solo on her trip back to Bim Asari tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Han threw a sharp look at Leia, got an equally surprised look in return.
Excuse me, he said, raising a finger. Tomorrow?
Mon Mothma looked at him, an expression of mild surprise on her face.
Yes, tomorrow. The Bims are still waiting, Captain.
I know, but...
What Han is trying to say, Leia jumped in, is that I had intended at this meeting to ask for a brief leave of absence from my diplomatic duties. I'm afraid that's impossible,
Mon Mothma said with a slight frown.
There's far too much work to be done.
We're not talking about a vacation here,
Han told her, trying to remember his diplomatic manners.
Leia needs more time to concentrate on her Jedi training.
Mon Mothma pursed her lips, throwing glances at Akbar and Phalia.
I'm sorry,
she said, shaking her head.
I, of all people, recognize the need to add new Jedi to our ranks. But for now, there are simply too many urgent demands on our time.
She looked at Phalia again, almost, Han thought sourly, as if seeking his permission.
In another year, possibly sooner,
she added, glancing at Leia's stomach.
We'll have enough experienced diplomats for you to devote the bulk of your time to your studies. But right now, I'm afraid we need you here.
For a long, awkward moment, the room was silent. Akbar spoke first.
If you'll excuse me, I'll go and have that escort force prepared.
Of course,
Mon Mothma nodded.
Unless there's something more, we stand adjourned.
And that was that. Jaw clenched tightly, Han began collecting his data cards together.
You all right?
Leia asked quietly from beside him.
You know, it was a lot easier back when we were just taking on the Empire, he growled.
He threw a glare across the table at Phalia.
At least then we knew who our enemies were.
Leia squeezed his arm.
Come on, she said. Let's go see if they've gotten 3PO cleaned up yet.
Chapter 9.
The tactical officer stepped up to the Chimera's bridge command station, bringing his heels smartly together.
All units signal ready, Admiral,
he reported.
Excellent,
Thrawn said, his voice glacially calm.
Prepare for light speed.
Pelion threw a glance at the Grand Admiral, then returned his attention to the bank of tactical and status readouts facing him, to the readouts and to the blackness outside that seemed to have swallowed up the rest of Pelion's five-ship task force. Three thousandths of a light year away, the Bipfash system's sun was a mere pinprick, indistinguishable from the other stars blazing all around them. Conventional military wisdom frowned on this business of picking a spot just outside the target system as a jumping-off point. It was considered dangerously easy for one or more ships to get lost on the way to such a rendezvous, and it was difficult to make an accurate hyperspace jump over so short a distance. He and Thrawn, in fact, had had a long and barely civilized argument over the idea the first time the Grand Admiral had included it in one of his attack plans. Now, after nearly a year of practice, the procedure had become almost routine. Perhaps, Pelion thought, the Chimera's crew wasn't as inexperienced as their ignorance of proper military protocol sometimes made them seem.
Captain, is my flagship ready?
Pelion brought his mind back to the business at hand. All ship defenses showed ready. The TIE fighters in their bays were manned and poised.
The Chimera is fully at your command, Admiral,
he said. The formal question and response, a ghostly remembrance of the days when proper military protocol was the order of the day throughout the galaxy.
Excellent,
Thrawn said. He swiveled in his chair to face the figure seated near the rear of the bridge.
Master Sabayoff, he nodded. Are my other two task forces ready?
They are,
Sabayoff said gravely.
They await merely my command.
Pelion winced and threw another glance at Thrawn. But the Grand Admiral had apparently decided to let the comment pass.
Then command them,
he told Sabayoff, reaching up to stroke the Islamir draped across the framework fastened to his chair.
Captain,
begin the count.
Yes, sir.
Pelion reached to his board, touched the timer switch. Scattered around them, the other ships would be locking on to that signal, all of them counting down together. The timer went to zero, and with a flare of star lines through the forward ports, the Chimera jumped. Ahead, the star lines faded into the mottling of hyperspace. Speed 0.3, the helmsman in the crew pit below called out, confirming the readout on the displays.
Acknowledged,
Pelion said, flexing his fingers once and settling his mind into combat mode as he watched the timer now counting up from zero. 70 seconds. 74. 75. 76. The star lines flared again into the mottled sky and shrank back into stars, and the Chimera had arrived.
All fighters, launch!
Pelion called, throwing a quick look at the tactical holo floating over his display bank. They had come out of hyperspace exactly as planned, within easy striking range of the double planet of Bibfash and its complicated system of moons.
Response?
He called to the tactical officer.
Defending fighters, launching from the third moon,
the other reported.
Nothing larger visible as yet.
Get a location on that fighter base, Thrawn ordered, and detail the inexorable to move in and destroy it.
Yes, sir.
Pelion could see the fighters now, coming at them like a swarm of angry insects. Off on the Chimera's starboard flank, the Star Destroyer Inexorable was moving toward their base, its TIE fighter wedge sweeping ahead of it to engage the defenders.
Change course to the farther of the twin planets,
he ordered the helmsman.
TIE fighters to set up an advanced screen. The Judicator will take the other planet.
He looked at Thrawn.
Any special orders, Admiral?
Thrawn was gazing at a mid-distance scan of the twin planets.
Stay with the program for now, Captain, he said. Our preliminary data appear to have been adequate. You may choose targets at will. Remind your gunners once again that the plan is to hurt and frighten, not obliterate.
Relay that,
Pelion nodded toward the communication station.
Have TIE fighters so reminded as well.
Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Thrawn turn.
Master Sabayoff, he said, what's the status of the attacks in the other two systems?
They proceed.
Frowning, Pelion swiveled around. It had been Sabayoth's voice, but so throaty and strained as to be nearly unrecognizable. As was, indeed, his appearance. For a long moment, Pelion stared at him, a cold feeling in the pit of his stomach. Sabayoth sat with unnatural stiffness, his eyes closed but visibly and rapidly moving behind the lids. His hands gripped the arms of his chair, and his lips were pressed so tightly together that the veins and cords in his neck stood out.
Are you all right, Master Sabayoff?
He asked.
Save your concern, Captain, Thrawn told him coldly. He's doing what he enjoys most, controlling people.
Sabayoff made a sound somewhere between a snort and a derisive chuckle.
I told you once, Grand Admiral Thrawn, that this is not true power.
So you've said,
Thrawn said, his tone neutral.
Can you tell what sort of resistance they're facing?
Sabayoth's frowning face frowned harder.
Not precisely, but neither force is in danger. That much I can feel in their minds.
Good. Then have the Nemesis break off from the rest of its group and report back to the rendezvous to await us.
Pelion frowned at the Grand Admiral.
Sir?
Thrawn turned to him, a warning gleam in his glowing eyes.
Attend to your duties, Captain, he said.
And with a sudden flash of insight, Pellion realized that this multi-edged attack on the New Republic territory was more than simply part of the setup for the Sluice Van raid. It was, in addition, a test. A test of Sabaoth's abilities, yes, but also a test of his willingness to accept orders.
Yes, Admiral,
Pellion murmured, and turned back to his displays. The Chimera was in range now, and tiny sparks started to appear on the tactical hollow as the ship's huge turbolaser batteries began firing. Communication stations flared and went black. Planet-side industrial targets flared, went dark, then flared again as secondary fires were ignited. A pair of old Karak-class light cruisers swept in from starboard, the Chimera's TIE fighter screen breaking formation to engage them. Off in the distance, the Stormhawk's batteries were blazing against an orbiting defense platform. And even as Pellion watched, the station flared into vapor. The battle seemed to be going well. Remarkably well. In fact, an unpleasant feeling began to stir in the pit of Pellion's stomach as he checked his board's real-time status readout. Thus far, the Imperial forces had lost only 3 TIE fighters and sustained superficial damage to the Star Destroyers, compared to 8 of the enemy's line ships and 18 of its fighters gone. Granted, the Imperials vastly outgunned the defenders, but still. Slowly, reluctantly, Pellion reached to his board. A few weeks back, he'd made up a statistical composite of the Chimera's battle profiles for the past year. He called it up, superimposed it over the current analysis. There was no mistake. In every single category and subcategory of speed, coordination, efficiency, and accuracy, the Chimera and its crew were running no less than 40% more effective than usual. He turned to look at Sabaoth's strained face, an icy shiver running up his back. He'd never really bought into Thrawn's theory as to how and why the fleet had lost the Battle of Endor. Certainly, he'd never wanted to believe it. But now, suddenly the issue was no longer open to argument. And with the bulk of his attention and power on the task of mentally communicating with 2 other task forces nearly 4 light years away, Sabaoth still had enough left to do all this. Pellion had wondered, with a certain private contempt, just what had given the old man the right to add the word master to his title. Now he knew.
Getting another set of transmissions, the communications officer reported. A new group of mid-range planetary cruisers launching.
Have the Stormhawk move to intercept,
Thrawn ordered.
Yes, sir. We've now also pinpointed the location of their distress transmissions, Admiral.
Shaking away his musings, Pellion glanced across the hollow. The newly flashing circle was on the farthest of the system's moons.
Order Squadron 4 to move in and destroy it,
he ordered.
Belay that, Thrawn said. We'll be long gone before any reinforcements can arrive. We might as well let the Rebellion waste its resources rushing useless forces to the rescue. In fact, the Grand Admiral consulted his watch. I believe it's time for us to take our leave. Order fighters back to their ships. All ships to light speed as soon as their fighters are aboard.
Pellion tapped keys at his station, giving the Chimera's status a quick pre-light speed check. Another bit of conventional military wisdom was that Star Destroyers should play the role of mobile siege stations in this kind of full planet engagement, that to employ them in hit-and-fade operations was both wasteful and potentially dangerous. But then, proponents of such theories had obviously never watched someone like Grand Admiral Thrawn in action.
Order the other 2 forces to break off their attacks as well,
Thrawn told Sabaoth.
I presume you are in close enough contact to do that.
You question me too much, Grand Admiral Thrawn,
Sabaoth said, his voice even huskier than it had been earlier.
Ah, too much.
I question all that is not yet familiar to me,
Thrawn countered, swiveling back around again.
Call them back to the rendezvous point.
As you command,
the other hissed. Pellion glanced back at Sabaoth. Testing the other's abilities under combat conditions was all good and proper, but there was such a thing as pushing too far.
He must learn who's in command here,
Thrawn said quietly, as if reading Pellion's thoughts.
Yes, sir,
Pelion nodded, forcing his voice to remain steady. Braun had proved time and again that he knew what he was doing. Still, Pelion couldn't help but wonder uneasily if the Grand Admiral recognized the extent of the power he'd awakened from its sleep on Wayland. Braun nodded.
Good. Have there been any further leads on those mole miners I asked for?
No, sir.
A year ago, too, he would have found a strange unreality in conversing about less than urgent matters while in the middle of a combat situation.
At least not in anything like the numbers you want. I think the Athiga system's still our best bet. Or it will be if we can find a way around the problems of the sunlight intensity there.
The problems will be minimal,
Braun said with easy confidence.
If the jump is done with sufficient accuracy, the Judicator will be in direct sunlight for only a few minutes each way. Its hull can certainly handle that much. We'll simply need to take a few days first to shield the viewports and remove external sensors and communications equipment.
Pelion nodded, swallowing his next question. There would, of course, be none of the difficulties that would normally arise from blinding and deafening a Star Destroyer in that way. Not as long as Savayoff was with them.
Grand Admiral Thrawn?
Thrawn turned around.
Yes, Master Savayoff.
Where are my Jedi, Grand Admiral Thrawn? You promised me that your tame Nogri would bring me my Jedi.
Out of the corner of his eye, Pelion saw Rook stir.
Patience, Master Savayoff, Thrawn told him. Their preparations took time, but they're now complete. They await merely the proper time to act.
That time had best be soon,
Savayoff warned him.
I grow tired of waiting.
Thrawn threw a glance at Pelion, a quietly smoldering look in his glowing red eyes.
As do we all, he said quietly.
Far ahead of the freighter Wildcard, one of the Imperial Star Destroyers centered in the cockpit's forward viewport gave a flicker of pseudo-motion and disappeared.
They're leaving, Mara announced.
What, already?
Card said from behind her, his voice frowning.
Already,
she confirmed, keying the helm display for tactical.
One of the Star Destroyers just went to light speed. The others are breaking off and starting pre-light speed maneuvering.
Interesting,
Card murmured, coming up to look out the viewport over her shoulder.
A hit and fade attack, and with Star Destroyers yet. Not something you see every day.
I heard about something like that happening over at the Drowkees system a couple of months back,
the co-pilot, a bulky man named Lacton, offered.
Same kind of hit and fade, except there was only one Star Destroyer on that one.
At a guess, I'd say we're seeing Grand Admiral Thrawn's influence on Imperial strategy,
Card said, his tone thoughtful with just a hint of concern mixed in.
Strange, though. He seems to be taking an inordinate amount of risk for the potential benefits involved. I wonder what exactly he's up to.
Whatever it is, it'll be something complicated,
Mara told him, hearing the bitterness in her voice.
Thrawn was never one to do things simply. Even back in the old days when the Empire was capable of style or subtlety, he stood out above the rest.
You can't afford to be simple when your territory's shrinking the way the Empire's has been.
Card paused, and Mara could feel him gazing down at her.
You seem to know something about the Grand Admiral.
I know something about a lot of things,
she countered evenly.
That's why you're grooming me to be your lieutenant, remember?
Touché,
he said easily.
There goes another one.
Mara looked out the viewport, in time to see a third Star Destroyer go to light speed.
One more to go.
Shouldn't we get moving? She asked Card. That last one will be gone in a minute.
Oh, we're scratching the delivery, he told her. I just thought it might be instructive to watch the battle, as long as we happen to be here at the right time.
Mara frowned up at him.
What do you mean we're scratching the delivery? They're expecting us.
Yes, they are, he nodded. Unfortunately, as of right now, the whole system is also expecting a small hornet's nest of New Republic ships. Hardly the sort of atmosphere one would like to fly into with a shipload of contraband materials.
What makes you think they'll come? Mara demanded. They're not going to be in time to do anything.
No, but that's not really the point of such a show, Card said. The point is to score domestic political gains by bustling around, presenting a comforting display of force, and otherwise convincing the locals that something like this can never happen again.
And promising to help clean up the wreckage,
Lacton put in. That goes without saying, Card agreed dryly. Regardless, it's not a situation we really want to fly into. We'll send a transmission from our next stop, telling them we'll try to make delivery again in a week.
I still don't like it, Mara insisted. We promised them we'd do it. We promised.
There was a short pause.
It's standard procedure,
Card told her, a touch of curiosity almost hidden beneath the usual urbane smoothness of his voice.
I'm sure they'd prefer late delivery to losing the entire shipment.
With an effort, Mara forced the black haze of memory away.
Promises. I suppose so,
she conceded, blinking her attention back to the control board. While they'd been talking, the last Star Destroyer had apparently gone to light speed, leaving nothing behind but enraged and impotent defenders and mass destruction. A mess for the New Republic's politicians and military people to clean up. For a moment, she gazed out at the distant planets, wondering if Luke Skywalker might be among those the New Republic would send to help clean up that mess.
Whenever you're ready, Mara.
With an effort, she shook away the thought.
Yes, sir,
she said, reaching for the board.
Not yet,
she told herself silently.
Not yet, but soon. Very, very soon.
The remote swooped, hesitated, swooped again, hesitated again, swooped once more, and fired. Leia, swinging her new lightsaber in an overlarge arc, was just a shade too slow.
Ah!
She grunted, taking a step backward.
You're not giving the Force enough control, Luke told her. You have to...
Wait a minute. Reaching out with the Force, he put the remote on pause. He remembered vividly that first practice session on the Falcon, when he'd had to concentrate on Ben Kenobi's instructions while at the same time keeping a wary eye on the remote. Doing both together hadn't been easy. But perhaps that had been the whole idea. Perhaps a lesson learned under stress was learned better. He wished he knew.
I'm giving it all the control I can,
Leia said, rubbing her arm where the remote's stinger blast had caught her.
I just don't have the proper techniques down yet.
She impaled him with a look.
Or else I just wasn't cut out for this sort of fighting.
You can learn it, Luke said firmly. I learned it, and I never had any of that self-defense training you got when you were growing up on Alderaan.
Maybe that's the problem,
Leia said.
Maybe all those old fighting reflexes are getting in my way.
I suppose that's possible, Luke admitted, wishing he knew that too.
In that case, the sooner you start unlearning them, the better.
Now,
ready?
The door buzzed.
It's Han,
Leia said, stepping away from the remote and closing down her lightsaber.
Come in,
she called.
Hi,
Han said as he walked into the room, glancing in turn at Leia and Luke. He wasn't smiling.
How's the lesson going?
Not bad,
Luke said.
Don't ask,
Leia countered, frowning at her husband.
What's wrong?
The Imperials, Han said sourly. They just pulled a three-prong hit and fade on three systems in the Sluis sector. Some place called Bip Fash, and two unpronounceable ones.
Luke whistled softly.
Three at once? Getting pretty cocky, aren't they?
That seems par for them these days.
Leia shook her head, the skin around her eyes tight with concentration.
They're up to something, Han. I can feel it. Something big. Something dangerous.
She waved her hands helplessly.
But I can't for the life of me figure out what it could be.
Yeah, Akbar's been saying the same thing.
Han nodded.
Problem is, he's got nothing to back it up. Except for the style and tactics, this is all pretty much the same rearguard harassment the Empire's been pulling for probably the last year and a half.
I know, Leia gritted. But don't sell Akbar short. He's got good military instincts, no matter what certain other people say.
Han cocked an eyebrow.
Hey, sweetheart, I'm on your side, remember?
She smiled wanly.
Sorry. How bad was the damage?
Han shrugged.
Not nearly as bad as it could have been. Especially considering that they hit each place with four Star Destroyers. But all three systems are pretty shook up.
I can imagine, Leia sighed. Let me guess. Mon Mothma wants me to go out there and assure them that the New Republic really is able and willing to protect them.
How'd you guess?
Han growled.
Chewie's getting the Falcon prepped now.
You're not going alone, are you? Luke asked. After Bim Asari.
Oh, don't worry, Han said, throwing him a tight smile. We're not going to be sitting ducks this time. There's a 20-ship convoy going out to assess the damage, plus Wedge and Rogue Squadron. It'll be safe enough.
That's what we said about Bim Asari, too, Luke pointed out. I'd better come along.
Han looked at Leia.
Well, actually, you can't.
Luke frowned at him.
Why not? Because, Leia answered quietly, the Bib-Fashi don't like Jedi.
Han's lip twisted.
The story is that some of their Jedi went bad during the Clone Wars and really mangled things before they were stopped. Or so Mon Mothma says.
She's right, Leia nodded. We were still getting echoes of the whole fiasco in the Imperial Senate when I was serving there. It wasn't just Bib-Fashi either. Some of those dark Jedi escaped and made trouble all throughout the Sluas sector. One of them even got as far as Dagobah before he was caught.
Luke felt a jolt run through him.
Dagobah? When was that?
He asked as casually as possible.
35 years ago,
Leia said. Her forehead creased slightly as she studied his face.
Why?
Luke shook his head. Yoda had never mentioned a dark Jedi ever being on Dagobah.
No reason, he murmured.
Come on, we can discuss history later,
Han put in.
The sooner we get going, the sooner we can get this over with.
Right,
Leia agreed, latching her lightsaber to her belt and heading for the door.
I'll get my travel bag and give Winter some instructions. Meet you at the ship.
Luke watched her leave, turned back to find Han eyeing him.
I don't like it,
he told the other.
Don't worry. She'll be safe,
Han assured him.
Look, I know how protective you're feeling toward her these days, but she can't always have her big brother standing over her.
Actually, we've never figured out which of us is older,
Luke murmured.
Whatever,
Han waved the detail away.
The best thing you can do for her right now is what you're already doing. You make her a Jedi, and she'll be able to handle anything the Imperials can throw at her.
Luke's stomach tightened. I suppose so.
As long as Chewie and me are with her, that is.
Han amended, heading for the door.
See you when we get back.
Be careful,
Luke called after him. Han turned, one of those hurt-slash-innocent expressions on his face.
Hey,
he said.
It's me.
He left, and Luke was alone. For a few moments, he wandered around the room, fighting against the heavy weight of responsibility that seemed sometimes on the verge of smothering him. Risking his own life was one thing, but to have Leia's future in his hands was something else entirely.
I'm not a teacher,
he called aloud into the empty room. The only response was a flicker of movement from the still-paused remote. On sudden impulse, Luke kicked the device to life again, snatching his lightsaber from his belt as it moved to the attack. A dozen stinger blasts shot out in quick succession as the remote swooped like a crazed insect. Effortlessly, Luke blocked each in turn, swinging the lightsaber in a flashing arc that seemed to engulf him. Strange exultation flowing through mind and body. This was something he could fight. Not distant and shadowy like his private fears, but something solid and tangible. The remote fired again and again, each shot ricocheting harmlessly from the lightsaber blade. With a sudden beep, the remote stopped. Luke stared at it in confusion, wondering what had happened, and abruptly realized he was breathing heavily. Breathing heavily and sweating. The remote had a 20-minute time limit built in, and he'd just come to the end of it. He closed down the lightsaber and returned it to his belt, feeling a little eerie about what had just happened. It wasn't the first time he'd lost track of time like that, but always before, it had been during quiet meditation. The only times it had happened in anything like a combat